Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, January 25th, 2024. Hi, Dave.
Melody.
David.
How the heck are you?
I'm great.
Happy National Irish Coffee Day.
Oh, a little bit of the, I just made some fresh coffee.
How about that? Well, in Ireland, in their kitchens and pubs, January 25th usually starts with a mug of strong coffee, a shot of Irish whiskey, sugar topped with a layer of cream. On a cold, wet day in 1942, the early days of World War II, weary travelers to the small Shannon Airport in Southwest Ireland found their way to a restaurant and their chef, Joe Sheridan, to warm his guests. Chef Sheridan served them hot coffee, spiked with a little bit of whiskey and topped with whipped cream. The passengers asked if the beverage was Brazilian coffee. Sheridan chuckled and said, nope, it was Irish coffee. And as they say, Melody, the rest is history.
History. So Irish coffee, that's with a little bit of booze in it.
There you have
is
it.
Is that the Irish that we're speaking of?
That be them.
Yes, that's the only Irish coffee that I know of. But it's really good for you if you have a cold or you're getting over an illness and so forth. You know, one of those hot toddies. So, not that I would do it during the month of January, but, you know, it's there for you. I wanted to find something here because there's something that we're going to be touching on. We're going to be touching on the GDP, and I lost my little graph that I had, but let's go ahead and see what gold and silver has done for the day. We have gold up $3 at 2019. Not a bad place to be. Yes, I'm a little unorganized at this direct moment. Let me bring up this other chart here. Silver was up 13 cents. It's over $23, $23.02. Platinum was down big, $17 at $898. And platinum was down huge, almost 3%, $28, $945. So it was really nice to see gold and silver break away from those other white precious metals, because I think sometimes when you see platinum, particularly palladium of late, because it had some huge drops recently, it has an impact on the whole sector. So, and it can slightly impact the gold and silver. So it's nice to see gold and silver break away from platinum and palladium. It'd be interesting to see. I'm still waiting for platinum to break away from palladium. I mean, if you have all your gold and silver that you think that you're going to need and you still don't know what to do with those leftover funds, it's always nice to add a little platinum to your portfolio. I mean, we always recommend that at least 10% of your overall precious metals should be in platinum. But especially since palladium had taken off and, you know, it's a Russian metal and so forth, and not sure how it impacts all the environmental aspects of, obviously they're not using it for EVs, so I'm not quite sure that aspects of how palladium will be played for the future. But anyway, so platinum is not a bad bet, you know, if you wanted to convert some of those paper dollars into something other than gold and silver. Let's go ahead and get to the Dow was up 240 points, 38,049. The S&P was up 25 points. The NASDAQ was also up 28 points. European markets were all strong. They were all in the green territory, as was Asia. So I'm not quite sure what happened to make the world come all around. Maybe it was China pumping up their markets because they were up 3%. And I know they're pumping in some big bucks in order to turn their paper markets around. You know, it's funny when these governments, ours included, when they can't create a good economy, when they've destroyed the economies and so many people's livelihoods by removing factories out of this nation, it's funny that their money that they create always goes into the paper markets. Just kind of funny. To keep those paper markets up. You know, and of course, they all manipulate their currencies, which is a big part of it also. So anyway, the 10-year yield, 4.13, that's down just a little bit. And oil today was up $2 at 77.23. And my natural gas was down another 2% at 2.58, on natural gas. And we're going to go ahead and, you know, this is probably, you know, probably one of the biggest, well, I'm not going to say it's the biggest, but one of the biggest, how they just spin it and they really don't tell you the truth about the GDP. And that's what I was trying to find was my previous, let me see if I can pull it up here. Yeah, there it is. So let's first go ahead and talk about the economy, that the report that we got, that it grew faster than expected, of course, in the final 3 months of 2023. We know that GDP measures all goods and services that is produced in the U.S. That increased at a 3.3% annualized rate in the fourth quarter of 2023. Now, this is, of course, data supposedly adjusted for seasonally and for inflation. So that compared with the Wall Street consensus, the estimate was, they were only looking for 2%. They're still looking at the third quarter growing at 4.9%. So if you look at the core prices for personal consumption expenditures, and that's the part where the Federal Reserve prefers as their long-term inflation measure, of course, rose 2.7%, down from 5.9% a year. So, but you know what, Dave, when I look at this chart that was on this one report, and you go back to 2021, 2022, 2023, you know, as much as they'll spin it and say that it was a great quarter or a great end, it wasn't. It wasn't. It's down considerably from the third quarter. And it really, if you go back to 2021, it's the same. So yeah, we had, there was a couple of good quarters, but basically, I mean, we went into negative territory, but hey, does anybody even remember that? No. And in the beginning of this, the last year, the 2022, the third quarter, the fourth, it wasn't that much lower than what we are now. So how good really is this number? It isn't.
Yeah, you know, it all depends how you look at it and what you compare it to. I mean, obviously, whenever there's a number that's characterized as good, it's usually relative to lower expectations or because the quarter below was lower. Or in fact, if the government propaganda machine is trying to dampen growth expectations in terms of what the Federal Reserve is looking at, you know, they might characterize it another way. And in fact, you know, well, it was only 3.3% this year or this last quarter compared with almost 5% in the third quarter. So in fact, it is slowing down, and perhaps, you know, the Fed can go ahead and start planning for its easing campaign and cutting rates. So be careful, ladies and gentlemen, when you see this or any other figure, just look at it in the context of expectations and the previous reports and trends, overall trends. They're I think probably important in terms of the direction. Now, this all presupposes that the numbers are somewhat accurate, and straightforward. And I mean, this is such a behemoth economy, with, you know, closing in on $30 trillion. You got to believe that there's some standard of error. And I wouldn't mind taking a look at that at some point, a little bit of a technical view. But
well, they got three times to review or revise the GDP. So, but I mean, if you go back over, you know, going back to the first quarter of 2022 to look at what the trend is, I'm just saying that they're telling us what a great economy we're having. And it's like, okay, well, show me. So we had a good third quarter. That was probably when most of your Christmas shopping was done. But the fourth quarter, well, actually, no, it wouldn't have been the third quarter. The fourth quarters would have been the holidays. And supposedly we had a bang-up holiday. You thought that it would at least be, you know, a little more comparable. So what really went on in that third quarter? And then we have to look at government spending. How much of this is all coming from our government spending? Those are the things that are always glossed over and never really figured into a lot of these equations and expectations. Yeah, people give these economists and all your, you know, banks and so forth give out, the Wall Streeters give out these expectations. But, you know, it's like pulling numbers from a hat.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, to remember is that 2024 is an election year. So, I mean, the numbers are what they are. But even, you know, more so, be careful of how you're being told or what you're being told the numbers represent, because there's a lot more posturing going on to make it look the way whomever's telling you about the numbers wants them to look. Now, state and local government spending contributed, apparently, was up 3.7% in the fourth quarter, and federal government expenditures up 2.5%. So that would have contributed a chunk to the increase. We know roughly almost 70% of GDP is consumer spending, And according to this report, personal consumption expenditures increased just about 3% for the fourth quarter. It's all in the way it's being presented, not just the numbers themselves.
Well, they should be. I mean, it should be just the numbers themselves. But I mean, you know, it's also, I wonder how much these state and local governments have done the spending, how much of that increased spending has gone to these illegal immigrants. I mean, we hear about how these big cities are whining and complaining and begging for money from the government because they can't afford to support all these people, the amount of money that goes to all of them once they get the asylum. I mean, it's billions of dollars. So how does that figure into all of this also? Any answer? Any thoughts?
No.
Okay.
No.
But it's a lot of billions of dollars, so it has to have a big impact on it.
I don't know. You should say it's a lot of billions because we really don't know that. That's all. I think that's just
Well, you can multiply the millions.
Speculation.
You can multiply the millions of illegal immigrants, multiply that by what they receive, and can come up with a, you know, fairly simple number. I mean, it's documented that they get, you know, housing and food and, you know, thousands of dollars. So if they weren't getting that much money, you wouldn't have mayors and governors complaining about it. So anyway.
Anyhow, we know that markets showed a surprise, in my view, a very surprising modest reaction to the report. Stocks and gold gained only slightly after the report came out. Well, Treasury yields initially moved marginally lower. Fed fund future markets now reflect a 53% likelihood that the Fed will hold rates steady in March. That figure was less than 10%, less than a month ago. In fact, over 90% of traders now see the Fed's first rate cut coming not until May. I find is an interesting as well, Melody.
My little prediction: as long as the paper markets are doing what they're doing, the Fed's not going to lower rates. Why would they lower rates if their little paper markets are doing fine? They're not going to do it.
Well,
only if they begin to tank will they do it to save them.
Well, there's still a heck of a lot of uncertainty.
There is
out there, and you know, with all the lagged effects of their rate increases so far on the economy as a whole and various aspects of it, I think I agree that they're going to stand pat and just wait to see if something big happens.
They're not going to do anything because you know what? Inflation is still here and their little numbers say it comes down. But you know what? People are still paying inflated numbers and that's not going to go away. Levi Strauss, I just saw that. They plan to cut at least 10% of its global workforce in restructuring.
Oof. Ouch.
And I think they would probably hire quite a few. I would think they would have, I don't know how many employees they have, but 10% seems like quite a bit, but that is globally, and that's all they have there. It's just breaking news. So 10%. And I saw some other cutbacks too, that was surprising. I don't know if you saw them today or not, where IBM, let's see. No, it's not IBM. Oh, eBay was cutting 1,000 jobs. I don't know how big eBay is. I mean, as far as employees.
Yeah, they used to be big, but I don't believe as big as they had been.
Yeah. So, we had jobless claims today. Let's see, that rose to 214,000 for the week ending January 20th. This is an increase of 25,000 from the previous week. And the four-week average of claims fell slightly. I hear the music already. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Talking away. I don't know what to say. I'll say it anyway. Today is another day to find you. Shine away. I'll be coming for your love.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website, dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. We got some great prices on some Silver Eagles. But I would say we're the lowest in the industry. They're not free, and we make a profit, and we're not giving them away. But when you compare them to my competitors, absolutely, we're very, very competitive. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Silver Rounds, it's a great buy on Silver Rounds. They're running about, depending on how many you get, but we can get them as low as $1.75 over spot. That's a pretty good price for 1 ounce silver round. Give us a call. It's the only way you'll be able to convert those dollars, your paper dollars, into real money. So, and IRAs at this time of the year are a hot item. A lot of people have retirement funds and they have them in IRAs and they don't like it sitting in paper. So you can roll some of that paper over into precious metals. You open up a self-directed IRA and you purchase the metals you can control. You know what? It's probably one of the first times if you open up that self-directed IRA, you can hold other products in there. And guess what? You control it. How about that? You get to control your own money. Who would have ever thought? Mm-hmm. But you can put precious metals in there. And so give us a call and we can help you get started on that. So 1-800-375-4188. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Well, I'm just going to touch on this. It's a good thing that we're not Turkey. They hiked their bank rates to 45%. I'm really not sure. I mean, we saw inflation in Turkey increase to nearly 65% in December, up from 62% in November. And their currency, the lira, hit a new record low against the U.S. dollar earlier in January, breaking 30 to the greenback for the first time ever. So I guess we're lucky in some sorts, but to say that can't happen here, I wouldn't. It can happen anywhere. But of course, who cares about Turkey, all right? These countries, it doesn't matter. It's not here, so why should we care about those or what's happening to those people? You know, earlier we talked about China. They're trying to improve access to loans. They rolled out some new rules meant to expand access to commercial bank loans for property developers. Because they're trying to, Beijing anyway, is trying to double down on its efforts to end a prolonged crisis in their real estate industry. So the policies will allow real estate companies to use bank loans pledged against commercial properties such as offices and shopping malls to repay their other loans and bonds to cover operating expenses. Well, Dave, that doesn't sound like anything can happen there. Mm-hmm. Isn't that like using your one credit card checks that you get to pay for another credit card check?
Using Peter to pay off Paul.
Yeah, I think that's even worse. But that's why you saw a big move on their stocks today, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, this particular article says dozens of developers have defaulted on their debts since the government cracked down on excessive borrowing in that industry a couple of years ago. I would guess that number is grossly underestimated. Yeah. And is a lot higher. I mean, the largest of those companies, China Evergrande, is still trying to resolve more than $300 billion in debts. And a Hong Kong court is due to hold a hearing on its restructuring plans next week in the hope that the country can avoid bankruptcy. But these latest policies are not a full reversal of the effort to rein in debt and control risks in the property industry. I think China, certain sectors in China have gotten so big so fast that the Communist Party there is playing catch up big time in a lot of these troubled industries. Now, these new rules say bank loans can't be used to buy commercial housing or rental housing or to start new construction or to buy land. And loans can't exceed 70% of the appraised value of the, existing property being used as collateral. That's a big issue over there. And I doubt it's going to get better anytime soon, Melody.
Wow. You have Levity is Golden this week, Dave. It's been a while since we've had that. And, you know, it's about skincare. So I think it's kind of interesting if you'd like to tell us about it.
Well, you might wonder why a story about skincare. it looks like young girls are buying up expensive Sephora beauty products, even if they don't need to. Experts say there are no proven benefits of using anti-aging products at, a young age, and that these products can actually introduce skin problems. Now, the issue isn't necessarily this per se. I view this more as a story about our cultural divides in this country and abroad, and a cautionary tale about, not believing everything you read on social media and here on TV. Here's this cosmetic chemist, Michelle Wong, who debunks skin myths on social media. As she says, She sees people post photos of normal skin that might have a single pore sticking out and ask, how do I get rid of this awful texture? Well, skincare marketing, only if you just have to watch. Well, you don't even have to be prime time. Any time of the day you turn on TV on virtually any channel, you're going to see a lot of ads. That marketing's ingrained in our culture, and particularly on social media sites, and tends to be a solution in search of a problem. That is, many ads aim to solve skin issues that just don't exist. The idea that young people are exploring beauty products that are geared for adults certainly isn't new. I mean, we've seen reality shows highlighting pre-adolescent girls putting on all sorts of makeup for their beauty competitions. It's crazy. Although they do apparently get good ratings. Well, an 11-year-old skin is different from and doesn't have the same needs as the skin of 20-somethings and older. Younger skin has plenty of collagen and fast cell turnover when new skin cells replace dead ones and hasn't accumulated much damage yet. Nazanin Saidi, we're going to call her Saidi, a dermatologist and associate professor at Thomas Jefferson University, here in Philadelphia, says more expensive skincare isn't necessarily better for your skin. She says gentle, highly researched products are often available in drugstores like CeraVe and Cetaphil are likely a better bet for tweens. Meanwhile, layering on too many skin products might actually introduce potential problems, the experts say. Saidi has seen that putting on all these products, people do have more irritation, flaking, redness, more inflammation on their skin, which isn't good. Even adding unnecessary moisturizer, she says, can be counterproductive by encouraging skin to make less of its own moisturizing components. Now, Wang recommends moisturizer only to those who have skin that's chronically tight, cracked, or flaky. And Saidi says, using a retinoid when you're nine years old isn't going to make your skin plumper or less wrinkly at 30. Well, more important than the products themselves, Wang says, parents and young people should focus on being more conscious of these influences that are making you feel like your skin is good or bad. I mean, similar to, you know, diets and weight loss products. Not all anti-aging ingredients are harmful for tween skin. Wang says strong ingredients like retinoids, also benzoyl peroxide and certain exfoliants could have benefits for people with severe acne and pigmentation issues. And although collagen won't work as a preventive wrinkle eraser, it could function as a moisturizer. So when it comes to preventing future skin damage for tweens anyway, sunscreen is the most important proven product. Beyond that, maybe a moisturizer, the experts say. Just remember, the term natural that you see on a cosmetic label means nothing. In other words, before you buy a skin product for you or especially your younger child or grandchild, do your research and talk with your children's healthcare provider. And that melody is this week's off the wall. Well, it levity is golden.
You know, isn't it so much true in almost all products? I mean, you mentioned the weight loss and all the things with the Ozempic and all that. I mean, folks, these are drugs in order to, if you have a diabetic problem. And yet people who don't have a diabetic problem are on these drugs. And I'm thinking, why would you want to take something that's going to help your body increase your insulin when you don't need to, because you'll never get off those drugs? Because your body is getting used to having help producing insulin. I mean, how healthy is this stuff? I don't get it. And it also affects your brain. I don't get it, Dave. I don't know. The advertising, and it's all about money.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's
sick.
This age, it's been going on for decades now, but you know, what's most important is how we look.
Yeah, but you know what? Decades ago.
And that's driving these terrible decisions.
decades ago, you didn't have the social media where you had 9-year-old little girls dressing up like they're 30.
No, well,
and
no
when there's so
there.
Many predators online, and then we wonder why we have, I mean, when you have pornography on the internet, that's, you know, it's just, no, there, it doesn't matter anymore. It's what it seems like. All of these, it just doesn't matter. And then they were changed in the culture where if it feels good, do it. I mean, these young kids, they don't know any better.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's just so much of this stuff all the stinking time that we become a nation and a world, certainly the Western world, of desensitized human beings. And it has led to this massive sense of complacency, if I don't give a you know what. And it's frightening. And
yeah, and where does it go and where does it end? Because it does end. It changes. I don't think it's going to end, but it will change. Something will have to change.
Wait till AI becomes more predominant.
I think it already is, society. And we just don't even know about it. Because when they do reports, here you have one where it's talking about the, you know, the role that it plays in chief executive officers with corporate boards and employees, putting CEOs on notice that they expect clear leadership around artificial intelligence efforts. We already know that we have laws being written for politicians, and people don't know that they're written by AI. I mean, it's like people are, I mean, you don't even have to use your brain anymore. Let AI think for you. Just give AI a couple of words, what you want, and they'll produce it for you. Who even writes books anymore? I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, and yet business, the business world, Dave, loves it because it saves them time. It saves them time. But then what about the social with all these young kids and stuff like that? Right. And, you know, we've seen globalization upend blue-collar work years ago. And AI is widely predicted to disrupt many white-collar tasks and in the coming years. And who knows? CEO themselves. Why do you need a CEO when you have AI? Why do you need anybody? What? But you know what? What are you going to have to do with these people that AI replaces? What are they going to do? You're going to have to get rid of them, pretty much. You're going to, and that's part of our problem now. We got too many people not doing anything. So half of these CEOs, I'd probably like to see replaced with AI. Jeez, Luigi, Dave.
Heads of the top 8 U.S. banks, chief among them.
Yeah. What did I hear his stupid comment from Davos, I think it was.
Diamond. Let me count the ways.
You know, I don't know if I can pull that up real quick here or not. But it's like, are you kidding me? What a creep. But hey, he's backed by our government. He's backed by our banks. He's backed. There's nothing, you know, he can do whatever he wants to do. Maybe he already is AI. He gets away with it's mind-boggling. And that's the world we live in. Like, we were just supposed to accept it. This is the new norm.
Do not accept it, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Push back wherever, whenever, however you can.
Mm. Do you have anything to add to that, Dave?
Absolutely not. although I will say, I do talk about the AI industrial complex that's growing in the third segment today. So stick around for that.
Well, there's reports. This is a good one. I mean, I think it's going to jump more than 10%. But here you have UBS. They're coming out saying that, hey, gold prices are going to go higher this year. They describe recent prices moves as minor in the context of the precious metals 15% climb in 2023. And he said the power of the Federal Reserve. Bullion remains above the psychological level of 2,000 per ounce. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's in the office this final segment. Take care of other client business. You know where to get her. 1-800-375-4188. Well, geopolitical risks in the Red Sea and extreme weather in Central America are converging. And that's upending global supply chains fed by the Suez and Panama canals. The impact on trade highlights what experts have long been warning about, with compounding events amplifying the growing economic toll of just all the craziness going on in the world. Now, Suez and Panama, two of the world's most crucial maritime trading choke points, are simultaneously at limited capacity, one of them for more climate-related reasons, a drought. In Panama, an extended severe drought has cut the canal's capacity significantly. The canal is fed by artificial freshwater lakes, which are also used to supply a lot of the country with its drinking water. Meanwhile, its Egyptian counterparts become a dicey option for shipping companies amid attacks by the Houthi rebels in Yemen. Most major shipping firms are now avoiding the Red Sea entirely and rerouting around the Cape of Good Hope in Africa. Guy Platten, who's Secretary General of the International Chamber of Shipping, says both the Suez and Panama canals are critical strategic choke points in terms of the global supply chain. And so you've got a bit of a perfect storm at the moment. In Panama, the drought is tied partly to El Nino, that climate cycle, along with long issues. Water levels in the reservoirs that fill the canals have literally plummeted. And that's forced the canal's operator to reduce the number of vessels transiting the strategic waterway by almost 40% and to focus on water conservation. Studies have warned for years that changing climate poses growing risk to complex global supply chains. Panama Canal is a vital component of many U.S. company supply chains since a trip through there cuts transit times for goods going between Asia and the Gulf and East Coast. Almost 40% of all U.S. container traffic comes through the Panama Canal. The 24 ships permitted to transit the canal daily. That's down from a typical daily average of 38. Many shippers are just bypassing the canal. Some carriers, including oil and liquefied natural gas tankers, are responding by, listen to this, sending their ships all the way south around the southern tip of South America. That adds 6 to 14 days to their journey, depending on size, and along with higher fuel costs and all the things that go along with that. Others, like Danish shipping giant Maersk, are putting cargo on rail cars to traverse Panama, with ships taking goods the rest of the way. And shippers aren't the only ones losing money. Panama officials say that the low water levels there may cost the Canal Authority as much as $700 million in revenue this year. The reduction in canal capacity has occasionally yielded long backups of ships waiting to transit through the 50-mile waterway, with the maritime traffic captured via satellite images. The severe drought has depleted Lago Gatun, the largest lake providing water to the canal system. In fact, in mid-August, it rivaled all-time lows and is now about 5 feet below its average for this time of year. So while Panama is a tropical country with typically abundant rainfall, there's the odds and severity of growing drought in this region. In addition, El Nino events favor below-average precipitation in Panama from July to December in particular, and a strong El Nino is currently underway in the tropical Pacific Ocean. But in this case, the dry conditions predate the El Nino and have defied the typical relationship with this cycle as well as the preceding La Nina. According to NOAA research meteorologist Andy Hull, the compounding effects of drought in the past 3 years has contributed to this situation. The most recent round of dryness seems to be related to the ongoing El Nino, while dryness in the past years was different from what typically happens during La Nina, he said. This suggests other factors being involved. While supply chain experts say the dual canal delays are likely to eventually push up prices for certain products, particularly manufactured goods in an industry that's already struggling, that depend on timely shipments of parts to factories. International Chambers Platten said a delay of 7 days is not just the delay in 7 days, it's the knock-on effects of everything after that. He said that as of January 22nd, there were 255 vessels being rerouted by the Red Sea situation with a capacity of 3.34 million standard containers. Another 174 ships that had been rerouted previously had already arrived at their destinations. Jonathan Kohlhauer, managing director of the global supply chain practice at UST, said the impacts won't come in the form of empty store shelves, but rather idle factories as crucial parts are delayed. Especially at risk for this, he says, are car manufacturers and the electronics industry. Thus, global strife plus a poorly timed drought, just another reminder of the fragility of modern supply chains around the world. The question is how this latest disruption will affect inflation in the U.S. and around the world. We'll have a better idea in the coming months. Now, briefly today, after today's GDP report that we spent a good deal talking about in the first segment, some analysts are saying forget the much ballyhooed discussions of a soft landing for our economy. They say in 2023, there was no landing at all. They say big economic rules broke last year, and the latest GDP report confirms that, even amid a big cool down in inflation. The above trend economic growth last coincided with inflation falling sharply, reflecting improvement in the economy's supply potential, these supply chain disruptions notwithstanding. Consumers spent more on goods and services. That was responsible for about 2 percentage points of the fourth quarter GDP rise. Businesses spent more on equipment and factories and intellectual property at a solid pace, up from the previous quarter as well. Jerome Powell, Fed chair, said in his December press conference, "We had significant supply side gains with strong demand," adding that the potential growth may have been higher than usual because just the healing on the supply side. So that was a surprise to just about everybody. Well, wait until we see how the Red Sea and Panama Canal situations play out. Chief economist Beth Ann Bovino at Too Big to Fail U.S. Bank says, "This report feels like a supersonic Goldilocks. Very strong GDP with cool inflation. Good news is good news." She added, "With high productivity levels, we can have strong growth with less inflation, as was the case in the 1990s. You know, good luck with that. Is past prologue? No, we can only wait and see. On the heels of last week's annual gathering of elites at the World Economic Forum, the momentum for developing artificial intelligence is growing fast. Fast. Yes, AI infrastructure is in high demand and short supply, and that's pushing tech giants and chip makers into an alliance with governments here in the U.S. and around the world to boost output. Already, this evolving AI industrial complex is rushing to spend fortunes to avoid overdependence on Taiwan's dominant chip factories. No one country or company has enough AI infrastructure, chiefly the advanced microprocessors that power generative AI systems. Those are now hoarding NVIDIA chips, while a slew of companies are promising to build chip factories on American soil, and state-owned or state-funded efforts around the world are seeking to build and commercialize AI models in a range of languages. Mark Zuckerberg announced last week that Meta has amassed 340,000 NVIDIA H100 GPUs. Those are the chips that have powered the development and use of ChatGPT. And OpenAI CEO Sam Altman is raising tens of billions of dollars to set up a network of chip factories to produce advanced semiconductors, most of which today, including NVIDIA's, are manufactured, yes, in Taiwan. Microsoft flagged chip shortages as a risk to its bottom line in its 2023 year-end report. And Altman told an audience last week in Davos that none of the pieces are ready for delivering AI infrastructure at the scale people want it. Zuckerberg, though, isn't taking any chances. He tells The Verge his H100 buying may be larger than any other individual company and will continue, whether others appreciate that or not. Now, Taiwan's role as the world's preeminent supplier of high-end chips could be disrupted by an invasion, by a blockade, or other military interference from China. China's government has laid claim to Taiwan since 1949, when it was occupied by the fleeing Republican losers in China's civil war. If that dispute turns hot, God forbid, the AI supply chain would almost certainly become collateral damage. Yuan-based AMD, which is NVIDIA's closest competitor in the AI chip market, has been looking to reduce its dependence on the industry-leading Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company, which fabricates most of their products. Taiwan's producers are hedging their bets as well. TSMC is working on a two-plant, $40 billion project, in fact, in Arizona. And Global Wafer, another Taiwan-based chipmaker, broke ground on a Texas plant in November after their CEO, Dara Su, warned that supply chains would break down within weeks if China invaded Taiwan. $200 billion has been committed to new U.S. chip manufacturing infrastructure across several dozen sites. The biggest investments come from the likes of Intel, Micron, and, yes, TSMC in Taiwan. And the Biden administration has also announced funding for 25 national AI research institutes. Global investments are also piling up. You got tiny UAE with fewer than 10 million residents has launched a new state-backed AI company to commercialize versions of the country's high-performing Falcon model. Their goal is to use AI to turn the country into a global power player. UAE's $1.5 trillion sovereign wealth fund controls Global Foundries, one of the five biggest semiconductor fabricators after its 2021 IPO here in this country. Japan also has an effort to reinvigorate its struggling chip sector. That's drawing the backing of companies like IBM. And also happening in India and UK. Indian government is purchasing 25,000 GPUs for startups and academics to use at 17 sites. British government's going to invest over $600 million. Indian government will also fund 500 AI deep tech startups at the product development stage, in line with French President Emmanuel Macron's plan to pump $600 million into creating what he calls local AI champions. Ministers in India, France, and Middle East all see homegrown AI models as ways to preserve and promote their languages and cultures. Now, Krutrim, that's an Indian startup, launched a 10-language system in December. Their CEO says it's going to help make India the most productive and empowered economy in the world. Especially now that it's taken over China as the number one population. Now, despite Silicon Valley's laissez-faire rhetoric and free market preferences, government and high-tech industries have long been intertwined here, illustrated by the internet itself, which started as a government research project. No, I don't believe it was invented by His Excellency Al Gore. Now, the phrase military-industrial complex, popularized by Dwight Eisenhower, five-star general and supreme commander of Allied forces in World War II, who warned in his presidential farewell address 63 years ago about the excessive influence of weapon manufacturers on government policy. And here we are, more than six decades later, we seem not to have heeded Ike's dire warning as the AI industrial complex gears up to overwhelm us, we little citizens of the world. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly blog in your email inboxes tomorrow morning. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.